Welcome to the Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Jones Zone. Today, we're going to talk about solar, a very, very popular product. So I have Chris Morley here from Orange County Solar. I've known him for a few years now, and I tell you, I wouldn't trust anybody else with my solar except for him. So he's going to give us some really great insight of solar and how this works and everything. So hopefully everybody's going to enjoy it. Chris, thanks for coming. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You being here. So let's just get right into it. Tell me what happens when someone wants solar. They call you and what questions do they typically have? How much does it cost?
So that's typically where we start. And for most people, it's obviously different. Depends on your personal home, your usage. So first thing I do is kind of do a profile of people. So we start with their electric bill. So take a look at your electric bill. Humans are creatures of habits. And then, you know, just ask some basic questions. You plan on getting an EV? If you went solar, are you going to use, you know, more AC? Do you currently not use your electricity because of the price? And if it was cheaper, would you use more? Kids, you know, are you going to have kids or kids leaving your homes? Those are things that drastically affect the difference of your solar bill. And so we kind of just go through that. And then once that is kind of determined, that allows me to build you out a system. And then from there, it's their personal finances. So if you have enough to go cash, then we kind of discuss that option. And if not, we got some good finance options. So this is another question that people ask me. I don't really get into the technical specs of solar panels. Not that I don't know them. I sell Panasonic primarily. The reason is they are currently the most efficient at 23.8%. But the truth of the matter is the difference in solar panels one brand to the next is very minute. So in the grand scheme of things, all that really matters is how many kilowatt hours is coming out of it. And when you look at it, I'm looking at software all day where I put these things on roofs. That number is so insignificant that I personally don't fixate on that. A lot of homeowners do because it's a talking point in solar, but I don't. The products that I pick are mainly due to warranty and who is warranting that product, because ultimately, as you know, a warranty is only as good as the person that actually holds the warranty.
Right.
We're putting $50,000, sometimes $100,000 systems on people's $1 million homes. The last thing you want to do is spend $100K. 5 years from now, that company's not in business. Now Daryl Jones is trying to sell your home, and you got $100K of junk opposed to $100K of Panasonic, Tesla, products that work, products that are warrantied, products that the new homeowner knows, if I buy this, it's going to work, it's going to be here. So that's what I personally focus on, which is let's make sure you get paired with a premium company. There are solar manufacturers that come and go in my business all the time.
Well, that's kind of in the news now, right? There's been a few solar companies, or was it Sun? What was the big one?
SunPower. I believe it's already been announced, but they're definitely closing their doors. Penguin Installer, which Penguin was a nationwide installer. I'm almost certain it's been announced that they're closing their doors. So yeah, you have manufacturers, you have installers in my business come and go all the time. And that to me is the scary part of solar. I don't think solar, as far as does solar financially make sense? I think if you sit down and look at the numbers, it's pretty glaring that the answer to that is yes. If you don't come up with that answer, well, frankly, maybe we should go back to math class, because you spend less going solar than you spend on the utility company.
And it'll have to do with how long you plan on being in the home.
But even that. So I get a customer that says, I'm only going to be here for the next 5 to 9 years. Okay, you either can finance it for 12 and your payment's going to be slightly less than your current bill, but it's not going to go up. Or you can do a lease that's transferable for 25 years and it's going to be half. And again, it's going to be fixed. Utility company, as we all know, is definitely not fixed. They love inflation. So we've hit the point when solar first was sold, it was sold on this idea of one day the utility company will be so expensive that this will make sense. we've passed that point. Like, solar upfront makes sense. Why don't people go solar? If you look online, it's customer service. So customer service was great until I got installed. Then my system went down. It took 9 months to get it back up. That's 9 months of utility bills that you got to pay, right? Mm. Then people start feeling like, well, what was the point of spending all this money? Or I went with Sunny Boy. I went with Solar World, and they went out of business. So now my $20,000 system means nothing. So those really are the two installers. I installed with somebody. They collected half my paycheck, and then I never heard from them again. Or they poked holes in my roof, and my roof started leaking, and then I never heard from them again. So it's not the concept of solar. It's not, does solar financially make sense against the grid? It's really the manufacturer and the installer, which companies you're pairing with really, really matters.
It seems now more than ever.
Correct.
Yeah.
And to me, that's normally the conversation I have with people now. Most people I talk to, I'm no longer doing the sale of, I need to convince you that solar makes sense. Really what I'm selling people now on is why Orange County Solar and as their installer, and then why Tesla and Panasonic as the products that I personally like to push.
Is it fair to say that, well, it sounds as though those are your two favorite. Would that be a proper way to say it?
It's not even a question. I am borderline at the point where I don't sell any other. I have the ability to. We're an installer. We have a giant warehouse full of everybody's products. I have other salespeople that don't feel the same way. They don't feel as passionate about the point that these companies do other things other than solar. I've just been in the industry long enough, and I've had customers call me and go, you sold me a Sunny Boy inverter and they're no longer in business. And I've had to say, well, at the time they were number one. Like, I didn't know.
Right.
And learning that lesson, I just don't want that to happen again. LG, I used to sell a lot of LG, and they're actually kind of a good example of why now I've stuck with Panasonic and Tesla, which is they're not in the industry no more. They still honor all their warranties, though, because they're LG. Solar is so minute part of their business that them exiting solar didn't mean that they could just not honor their warranty.
So do people typically call you, and then is your business kind of divided up to where Tesla and Panasonic, will they contact you and say, hey, we need an install, or does the customer call you and then you talk to them about choosing either Panasonic or Tesla or whoever?
So the second model. So Tesla, we're Tesla's premier installer, which means we're actually getting certified to do their Tesla roofs, which is basically a luxury item. They don't financially make sense. They don't solar make sense. They're strictly, I have a $5 million house. I want to be able to say that I'm solar and I want it to look good. I don't like how solar panels look. So I'm going to pay $250,000 for a roof that I could spend $40,000 to get a solar system. Again, it's more of like a show-off piece.
You're dripping in gold, you can do that.
Correct. And then Panasonic, we are their elite installer, so we get special warranties to our customers. But by no means is Orange County Solar required to sell those products. We advertise on Yelp. We're 5-star on Yelp. And so that's how we get a majority of our leads, is just people see us on Yelp, see us on Google. They call us directly, and then I do a consultation. And again, I could sell other people other products. I have some customers that come to me and they go, Chris, I hear what you're saying, but I've made my own opinion and I would like XYZ product. Do you sell it? Absolutely. And we sell it, we install it, and no problem. That's just personally not what I would do. And I kind of sell like that.
I just love the fact that you don't have one product to sell. I mean, obviously you're selling solar, but one manufacturer. So, I mean, it sounds as though it's more authenticity there, where you're, it's not as if you have to only sell, you know, a particular solar brand. Am I making sense?
100%. And a lot of the other hard part of my industry is there's a lot of bad info out there. Like, people will straight up just make stuff up about other companies. And I normally tell my customer, go ask them if they can sell that product. And that normally is what it is you essentially, if someone can't sell Tesla, they say bad things about Tesla. Enphase is another.
Oh, you mean they're not allowed to sell it? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. So I was thinking there's no demand for it. Okay. Yeah. They're not allowed to sell it.
So if they're not certified with Tesla, you can't sell Tesla. So people will just say things about Tesla. If you're not certified through Panasonic, you can't sell Panasonic. If you're not certified through Enphase, you can't sell Enphase. So there are companies that only have one or two of these certifications, not all of them like us. And so people's opinions, other salespeople's, is definitely drastically skewed based on what they're able to sell. And so I actually do tell a lot of people that is, go ask them if they can offer you everything. Because a lot of times, most salespeople cannot.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So how much energy can the solar panels generate in an average day? Let's say, well, of course, we're in Orange County, sunny California. Well, of course, we're in Orange County, California. It's sunnier here. So I'm guessing that will range depending on what region of the country you're in, but here in Southern California.
Yeah, so daily it's a little, we look at things more yearly. And again, this is a very general answer as far as the positioning of your roof is going to make a huge difference. The do you have shade? So are trees going to block it at all? It's going to make a huge difference. But typically the number I use for people and customers is like just a quick idea and concept is if you get a 6 kilowatt system, it's going to produce 1.5 times the kilowatt hours yearly. So if someone tells me I'm looking to produce 10,000 kilowatt hours, in my head, I know I can divide that by 1.5. And that gives me a general idea of what system size they need. Now, again, ideally, eventually, I will actually go look at your personal roof and we will get you a custom system. But if I'm just on the phone and someone wants to give me a ballpark of what you think I'm going to need and what that's going to cost me, that's how I do it in my head, because I've looked at enough of these to know that that's a pretty even number. Like, we do end up somewhere around there.
And I'm assuming, is it south-facing roofs?
So south-facing is most ideal. Like, if I really have a south-facing roof, that number gets more to like 1.7, 1.8. If it's a north-facing roof, that number is more like 1.3, 1.4. And then the east and the west are somewhere in the middle of that, which is why 1.5 is a pretty good number.
It seems like, I don't know if it's just that I've noticed it recently or they've always been doing it, but it seems as though, I remember solar panels would pretty much be flat on the roof, but it seems like some are now, they're tilting probably to the south, I'm guessing. Has that always been the case?
Yeah. So the problem with it is purely aesthetics. So right. In theory, yes. Ideally, we point everything to the south. So if you have a roof and it's north facing, we actually install it north and then do a reverse tilt. Problem with that is if your system is on the front of your house, that means you're essentially going to be every day you walk up to your home looking at the bottom side of solar panels. Most homeowners are not okay with that. Additionally, if it's on the back side of your house, same idea when you're going to have people over and throw parties. They're going to look up at your house and you're going to see racking, railing, the whole side of the back. So a lot of it, we've been doing that for years. Just most people aren't willing to do it. They look at the cost differential. So, okay, if I did it that way, how many kilowatt hours would it produce? If I didn't do it that way, how many more panels would I need to offset that? Okay, it's 3 or 4 more panels. That's 3 or 4 more $1,000. I'm going to get the tax credit on that. Grand scheme of things, it's $2,000. Hey, babe, do you want to spend $2,000 and have to look at this stuff? Or, you know, and that's normally how it plays out with, especially the homeowners that we use or we install for, is the aesthetic portion becomes more important than the money portion, and so we don't install like that.
That makes sense. Now, you brought up tax credits. How what are the tax credits now in 2024?
So it's a 30% rebate on the solar and anything that it would required for you to go solar. So if you do a main service panel upgrade, or if you have to upgrade your roof for that section, all of that is going to be rolled into your contract. And then you're going to get 30% of that back. And again, I like to point this out to people. It's a rebate. It's not a deduction. So this isn't, I spent $30,000. I make $200,000. Now I get a claim. I only make $170,000. This is, you've already paid in $30,000 into taxes off your base salary. You're going to get rebated that up to this identical dollar amount. So those are the only people that don't qualify for it, is someone that's retired. Or like if you own a small business and you write everything off, then you technically don't qualify for it. Everybody else does. So there's no income minimum, income maximum. There's no contract minimum, contract maximum. I've sold $20,000 contracts. I've done $150,000 contracts.
Is that state or federal? State?
So that is a federal law. So that is every single state. I believe California just passed a additional 10% for any manufacturer made in the United States. The problem is there aren't any.
Well, now, and then speaking of passing bills, aren't all homes built in California starting in a certain
2020
year?
So starting in 2020.
2020?
It was 20.
4 years ago?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We didn't see it. So they passed that law in 2020. It didn't catch on until about 2022, where cities were like starting to crack down on it. But in actual 2020, it took effect.
Which means, and to explain the law, all new homes were required to have solar.
Correct. So you'll have new homes. If you add any square footage to your home, you'll have to put solar on it. This is really popular in the ADU world since ADUs are starting to blow up. We get a lot of calls for that. Hey, I'm building my ADU. I'm trying to get my permit. And they're telling me I'm at the point where I have to have solar on my plans in order to do so.
God, that brings up a great question, a thought. So ADU, because sometimes getting the utilities to the ADU can be somewhat problematic, and that you can solve that problem.
Yes.
Somewhat.
So a lot of people that get ADUs, they want a second meter. They want the whole entire thing because, I mean, they're renting it out. They want to try to make it where they can rent out front property, back property. And we can help with that whole process as far as, because it is dealing with these utility companies is a drag. They don't move their feet fast at all. They're not incentivized to. But yes, we typically handle those processes for our customers because we do it enough and we have good enough relationships with these cities and utilities that we can kind of make it move quicker.
And we talked, I think, a little bit about this long time ago. And in order to be, when you want to get solar, they need a battery in their garage. I'm going to just talk about this as if I don't know anything, which is actually the case. They get a battery in the garage that stores the, tell us a little bit about the process, the science behind it, or if you could.
Yeah. So what you're kind of alluding to is in April, there was a big change in the solar law. So in the solar world, net metering is the term that we use for like the law that basically dictates what the utility company has to pay you when you send electricity back to the grid, right? It's not fair if you send it and they pay you nothing. So back in net metering 1.0, it was literally a dollar for dollar. So the law was if they're charging you 30 cents to pull, then you get 30 cents every time you send. And so it was a 100% even exchange. Super simple to build a system. You use 10,000, we make 10,000. If you use it when it actually uses, great. If not, you send back to the grid, you'll pull at night, you'll pull during the day, who cares? As long as we're on a 1-to-1 ratio, no bill. Then they went to net metering 2.0, which was a time of use case. So it was the same idea, but now instead of it always being 20 cents or 30 cents, the time of day dictated what they had to pay you. Then obviously the utility companies got smart. And so in the morning when all your solar is produced, they made it cheaper. And during 4 to 9 when everybody gets home and at nighttime, they made it more expensive because there's no solar.
Surprise.
Correct. Now the ratio was so close that during NEM 2, we still didn't need to install batteries. We could basically just go, you need 10,000 kilowatts. We'll produce 12,000 kilowatts and the additional 20% will make up for the essentially the loss in credit that you're not getting an even dollar for. NEM 3.0 started in April 15th. Now they only have to pay like 2 or 3 cents.
The utility company.
Correct. So now if you send it back to the grid, you send 10 at the grid at 3 cents, but you pull at night at 40 cents, you have a giant bill at the end of the year. So now batteries have basically become required in order to make sense, like financial sense out of the whole mess. Because basically the game now is make your system. If you're home using it, wonderful. If not, store in the battery. Then when you get home at night, pull from the battery. Use the grid as little as possible. And that was the whole argument that the grid made of the net metering 3.0. And although I hate the grid and they're just rich, greedy people, they do have some argument to be made, which is our grid is super undersized. They didn't size the grid for as many people as we have. They didn't size the grid for electric vehicles. They didn't size the grid for the fact that in the next couple years, all lawnmowers, leaf blowers are going to have to be electric. They didn't know we were going to have computers and all these things back in the 50s. So our grid is undersized. To make Edison pay for it, the whole thing, I mean, they've made enough money, maybe they should. But that's basically their argument, is we shouldn't be responsible for fixing the grid for everybody.
And with that, on that note, you can get batteries to where more than likely you would kind of not have to really use Edison too much, or because I know these batteries are big, right?
Yeah. So that's so selling solar, in my opinion, has gotten more complex, and that's kind of what makes somebody good at their job or bad at their job. And in my opinion, what makes somebody honest and not honest in my industry, which is sometimes you have to tell somebody you have a small system, but based on your usage and our conversation, you're going to need two batteries, because you're telling me you work till 7:30 at night, you get home and all your usage is charging your electric vehicle at night and you run it at night. So even though you only use a very little amount of kilowatts, it's 100% at night. That means you need 100% of batteries to be able to run.
And how big is a normal, is there such thing as a normal size battery for solar?
That's the other thing. So Enphase sells a 5P battery. So it's a 5 kilowatt battery. That's like the smallest battery you're going to find. Most batteries are in the 10, 20. So they're 10. If you buy two, it's 20.
And how big are they? Physically, how big are they?
So the Tesla battery I like to sell, it's a 13.5 kilowatt battery and it's 4.5 feet tall. It's about 2.5 feet wide, and then it sticks out about the wall about 6 inches.
Okay.
So it's not too bad. And then once you have one, we basically stack them, as long as the additional 6 inches is not going to cause any sort of fire walkway. Or...
Normally in the garage, or I'm guessing. Or...
So that's the other thing. A lot of homeowners want them in the garage, and I understand why one would want it in the garage. But maybe 5 to 7 years ago, couple yo-yos decided to run into these things and they caught on fire.
Oh.
And so the city now requires that we put Ballard systems in front of them. We have to put a smoke detector. We have to install noise detectors throughout your house. So between the cost, and then be anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 more to install it there. And depending on the surface of your garage, some garages we can't screw into because they're, I don't know the material name off the top of my head, but there's basically a high-end material that it's hollow underneath. So the second you screw into it, the whole thing's going to crack.
Mm.
And so if you have that as your garage, then there's nothing we can do about it.
Hate to learn that the hard way.
Exactly. So these things are rated for outside.
That's what I was going to ask you. Okay, if the garage is, let's say, the most popular requested place to put the batteries, what's the second? Where are other places, other options?
So for us, what we're trying to get in, like, homeowners to be willing to do is install it as close to the main service panel as possible. It makes it easy for the install, less conduit run, so it looks better, easy for the fire department to know where it's located if they ever need to come shut the thing off. So that's where we're going. Now, obviously, sometimes it becomes a spatial issue.
And outside, you're saying outside.
Correct.
Yeah.
So ideally, we install every battery outside. That's our goal. Now, we do have some customers that they don't want it. Again, they're high-end. They have the money. They don't care that it's $3,000. And it's 100% doable. So we can do it. We don't mind doing it.
Put it anywhere.
Correct. We'll put it anywhere. But if people are asking our recommendation, we're typically going out there saying, here's your main service panel. You have a nice giant open wall on your garage. Let's put it right here. So that's our goal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any warranties or guarantees associated with the solar panels? What kind of warranties do these provide?
Yeah, so it's very typical in my industry, 25 years manufacturer warranty. So this is not from the installer. This is whatever brand you're buying. You'll get a 25-year manufacturer warranty. Now, the special part of our warranty that we get specifically on the Panasonic panels is the labor is included. Now, you'll always, not always, but typically installers will give you a labor warranty, but manufacturers will never give you labor warranties. Because we're Panasonic's elite, Panasonic gives our customers a labor warranty. So Orange County Solar goes out of business, we register your equipment to their website, they'll send a new elite installer out, fix your system for you, bill Panasonic directly.
Well, anything that's common that is not covered under warranty. So for example, last night it snowed at my house.
Huh.
In
California,
Belinda.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it snowed last night and it was so loud. It was amazing. In any event, my point being is, so let's say, I mean, if a big chunk of hail hit it, is that covered or no?
So that's a great question. And that's actually another discussion I have with a lot of people that most solar people don't, which is your warranty is just for performance. So it's, did we build it wrong, right? Not we as Orange County Solar, but the manufacturer. So if it stops working and it's a wiring or some sort of that issue, but if a golf ball hits it, if hail hits it, if somebody gets up there, your ex-wife, and beats it with a baseball bat, none of those are...
I didn't even know you knew her. I'm joking.
None of those are going to be under warranty, right? Because that's not... The manufacturer didn't build it improperly. That's a outside fact.
Right.
But if you put it on your homeowner's insurance, then it's all 100% covered. Typically, that's anywhere from like $5 to $9 a month.
Well, okay, so you, if we're getting solar, it'd be wise to consult your insurance agent and let them know.
Correct. That's what I would personally do. I mean, again, for $5 to $9 a month, anywhere from a $30,000 to $50,000 system. Especially, we do a lot of installs in the higher areas, so like Codo, where there's a golf course and stuff. Okay, you are more likely to have a golf ball hit your solar system than the average person. You probably should go get this.
Yeah,
that would make sense. Put on your homeowner's insurance.
Yeah, and what kind of maintenance are these panels going to require?
So that's the ideal, beautiful part about solar. It's, you put it up on your roof and you forget about it. Gets rid of your electric bill, and this is something you're not thinking about. They don't break that often. They don't require any maintenance. Now, some people will want to hose them off for like an aesthetic look. They will get dusty, like an actual look of dust, but these things are made to produce in that dust.
Yeah, you were telling me that. I was kind of surprised because I've seen companies that offer cleaning your solar, and they're talking about, from my recollection, how it will increase the functionality of it, etc., but it really doesn't.
Yeah, so this is actually a talking point at work right now because we've just added this service, but until I personally am presented evidence that makes that look like a real argument, I don't believe that to be the case. I've installed enough of these. I've asked enough of my customers, hey, how often do you clean these? Because I'm looking at your production, and based on your production, it's producing what I told you. So are you cleaning this at all? Nope, haven't cleaned them in 3 years.
And it hasn't changed, so you, therefore, there's your evidence that, look, you don't have to keep it sparkling clean.
Correct. So again, because I've been in the industry enough, seen enough of the back end of it, I've never seen enough anecdotal evidence that would make me suggest that in California, our weather's super simple. These things are made to be in Utah, Arizona, Texas, places that actually have seasons.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there is the rare case that we have a fire, flock of birds flies over and poops all over your system. Then, yes, you might need to get up there and clean it every once in a while. But as a general rule of thumb, I do not believe that these things need cleaned.
That's good to know. Well, speaking of that, you're talking about the weather. How does that affect the performance?
So, obviously in the summer, your system produces a lot more in the winter. Now, luckily, people's usage typically reflects that. Those are actually the hardest people to make solar make sense for, is people whose usage is very even keel, and their winter months are actually higher than, like, ratio-wise, than somebody who is very spiked, because to some degree that's how solar systems produce, right? We have an up and a down. In the winter, it's producing half of what it does in the summertime.
And there's some people that actually use more energy during the wintertime?
Very few people use more, but there are a lot of people. They're typically people that live right on the beach and are super coastal. That's usage is pretty even kill. Mm. And you see this because they basically don't run the AC, and they'll be like someone that has two EVs. So most of their usage is just electric vehicle charging, and they do that yearly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, but you, and forgive my questions, they may sound naive, or they are naive. You pretty much have to have sun. The cloudy days don't work?
No, so that's what's interesting is, I mean, even in the winter, your system is producing. It's just not going to produce the same amount that your summer months is going to. And a lot of it isn't even just the sun, it's the length of the sun. So in the same way that you ever gone outside and it's 70 and cloudy and you think, oh, I don't need to wear sunscreen, and then you come home and you have a sunburn. Now,
right.
It's not the same sunburn as if you went out at 120 degrees and didn't do it, but it's they're still seeing the sun arrays, they're still producing.
What's a, let's say, an overcast day, or I don't know, you may not have an answer to this, but a completely sunny day, call that 100%, a completely overcast day, 20% of the power of a sunny day?
Yeah, so I would say 50. It's like, again, when I'm looking at my December versus my August, September, on a system, it's typically half. So this December is doing 600 kilowatts. This is doing 1200 kilowatts. So it's normally about half. Yeah. It's a good number. Obviously, that can vary.
Can the solar panels be integrated into the existing electrical system pretty seamlessly nowadays? I mean, how difficult is it? I mean, pretty much anybody can get solar.
Correct. So anybody can get solar. The only thing that really can be a problem is your main service panel size. If it's a 100 amp and you need to install a big enough system because the breaker size is going to get big enough, you might have to upgrade to a 200 amp. Tesla's actually fixed this problem. So we actually now have to do a lot less main service panel upgrades as like a mandate. That being stated, most people want to go to a 200 anyways, because if you're going to get an EV, if you're going to do anything in the future, you're going to have to upgrade. It's a great time to upgrade because then it becomes mandated. It's in your, you get 30% back. You're paying the same permit as you are the solar, so your overall cost is cheaper.
Is it just 100? I should know this. 100 to 200? Is there something? I'm sure it goes up even higher than 200.
Yeah, so we have 400 amp main service panels. I mean, businesses have even bigger than that. But in homes, you typically only see 1, 2, and 4. 400s are still pretty rare. I mean, you're talking at that point, typically these are $5 to $50 million mansions we're working in that have 400 amp panels.
All right. Yeah, not a bad place to work.
Yeah.
What's it cost to install solar? I guess that's an open question because I'm sure it'll vary based on how many panels you need, et cetera. But let's say a 2,000 square feet. Or do you have a quick answer to that question? How much does it cost to install solar?
Yeah, so right now, my average solar system that I'm installing is somewhere between $25,000 and $35,000. And that's offsetting somewhere in between a $250 and a $350 electric bill. Now, obviously, I get those people that are smaller electric bills, so smaller system, than people with much larger electric bills, much larger systems. But that's typically the cash price that I'm seeing on average. How the finance typically works is if you finance it for 12 years, you're either seeing a small reduction in your payment or it's almost a push. So if your current electric bill is $250, it's now going to be $250 the finance company, but you're going to get a nice big check from the government. So you're paying the exact same amount that you were, but you get $10,000.
On that note, is there a difference between rebates whether you lease it or buy it?
So if you lease it, you don't get the rebate. The lease company gets the rebate because they technically own it, which is why lease warranties are, lease contracts are different than if you like finance it through a finance company. Because technically is the lease company technically owns it. So you do have a little bit more guarantees when the lease company owns it. You get a little bit more warranties when the lease company owns it, but you don't get the federal rebate. And in theory, you're never going to get to own it. Now, I don't believe that's how it's going to play out. I personally think if you go with the lease, 25 years from now, you are going to get to own it, because at the 25-year mark, they're not going to come and take all their equipment off your roof.
And I asked you this question before, and I was actually surprised on the answer. What are your thoughts? Will the advancements in technology are going to affect it to where in 25 years, it'll be, you'll probably want to upgrade it anyway. I guess this is just theory but being you're in the business, I'd like to get your opinion.
Yeah, so panels, probably not. Batteries, most definitely. Reason for panels is the material they're made out of is so cheap. 2017, we had a big breakthrough. They only waste about 1% of the material now. So is that going to go down? Possibly, but again, it's a minute percentage. Additionally, we're in the 23-24% of efficiency. I've seen studies done where in a perfect non-friction, you know, vacuum world, these panels could get to 30. Like that's the absolute top number. And basically companies have gone, we're so close to where we think we could get anyways. The bang is not worth the buck, right? I'm not going to spend $100 million to get 1% efficient. When battery technology, someone came out with a battery that had a 25-year warranty and never went bad, they'd run the whole industry. So there's so much improvement to be made in that area of this whole thing that all the money has been pushed that way.
So back to the rebates, I'm sorry. It's basically, heck, between leasing it financing and owning it outright cash, you're better off on owning it. And then if you do, if you can't pay the cash, let's say 25, not everybody has 25 or 30,000 in their pockets. And would it be fair to say that you're probably better off financing it due to the fact that you get the rebates? And then even though it does require a payment opposed to leasing it, or any thoughts on that?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm not a big believer in leases. There are certain circumstances where leases make sense. I'm becoming a bigger believer in leases now that batteries are required. And the reason for that is the lease companies actually do give you a 25-year battery warranty, where your battery warranty only has 10 years. Now, if you look at how many payments you're going to make, there's a strong argument that you paid for the second and third battery anyways, basically just through all those payments that you would have made. But if you're old and retired and you don't get the federal rebate, the lease is going to make more sense because the payment's going to be half the payment of your 12-year. It's going to be cheaper than your 20-year, and you're not going to get the rebate anyways. If you don't have good credit or really bad debt to income, the lease companies are so, they basically approve everybody. If you don't know if you're going to be in the home very long, I'm only going to be here 5 years. The finance companies aren't assumable. The ones that are have giant fees, and so they become worse than the leasing products.
Right.
And so there's a good argument to be made. Well, you can lock your lease in, cut the payment in half, basically. And then when the new homeowner gets here, all you're convincing them is you're going to have this lease, which is a $200 payment. But if you didn't have this lease, you'd be paying the utility $400 or $600. More than likely, they're going to pick that up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it becomes simple to transfer.
So now, are there any additional fees? You talked about that $25,000 to $30,000, just as a number that's oftentimes common. Does that include everything? Are the batteries extra? How does that part work?
Yeah, so when I'm quoting somebody, I'm giving you an all-inclusive price. The only thing that is not included is legally we can't put your PTO fee in, which is permission to operate from the utility company. It's like a $98 fee, a $100 fee at the end of this whole thing that you have to pay the utility for them to switch you. And for some reason, the tax code states that that's not part of the whole project. I personally don't understand it. But other than that, this is an all-inclusive quote. When we do a site inspection every once in a while, we do have to come back out and go, we looked at your roof, your underlayment's bad. We have to replace your underlayment if you want to do this. We'll give you a quote. We do everything in-house. We're in-house roofing. But at that point, people do have the option to back out. No strings attached. No money was lost.
Speaking about roofs, so how do you handle, I mean, for example, I'm picturing a clay tile roof or so fragile. How does that, or is someone with a clay tile roof, can they even have solar?
Yeah, so that's kind of specialty of ours. Not everybody will do it. Tesla won't do it. Some other big companies, they just will not touch it. We'll do it. It does cost you more. So if I thought you had a regular tile roof, you had a clay tile or a lightweight tile roof, there is an additional fee for that. There's two different ways we can go about installing them. We can install it exactly like we would a regular clay tile roof, which is just with traditional S-hooks. Or we can do something that we call a comp out, which is basically we remove all the tiles. We lay a composition
where the solars
are going to go. Put the panels down and then frame your remaining tiles around it. Almost gives it like a built-in look. Like, yeah, you're looking from the street, you kind of look at it and go, man, did that roof like come with those solar panels? It is more expensive to do it that way. So I always present people both. The only advantage is, again, 100% an aesthetic look. Again, we deal with enough high-end customers that I have a lot of customers that I don't care that it's another $2,000. I want it to look like that. I have some customers that specifically ask for that, and that's why they come to us, because we install that way.
Would clay tile be the most challenging roof to put it on? Are there any other roofs?
So clay and lightweight, okay. Metal. Metal's actually the worst.
Oh, yeah, because you're, yeah.
Not metal seam. Metal seam's actually the best, but metal shingles.
Yeah.
And the reason it's the worst is we have to treat it exactly like clay and lightweight, but most metal roofs don't have wood underneath of them. Then we also have to install plywood underneath of them, and that can get costly. So,
oh, yeah.
Metal shingle roofs typically are the most expensive to install.
Oh, that's a real important information. So from start to finish, what's it usually take? How long does it typically take? If someone called you today and they signed the contract today to have you install, how soon can that solar be on their roof and working?
Yeah, so we're trending right now at a 60 to 90 days. So start to finish. Now, obviously, there are a couple things that could hiccup that. If you need a main service panel upgrade, depending on what utility company you're in, SDG&E for some reason takes forever to get us a meter spot, where like SCE only takes us 21 days. So we can do that at the same time we're getting your permits. Doesn't slow us down at all. In San Diego, it can take us anywhere from 3 to 6 months. So we can be holding your permit for a couple months and there's nothing we can do about it because you can't move forward until the main service panel's been upgraded.
Yeah, that makes sense. What type of inverter is compatible with the solar panels?
So, I mean, solar panels are compatible with a lot of inverters. I think the point of your question is, in my industry, there's two styles of inverters. There's string inverters, and then there's optimizers or microinverters. The pros and cons of the two are microinverters go on underneath every single panel. They make every single panel individual. And so if one panel fails, they all don't fail. One panel shaded, they're all not shaded. The downside to microinverters is in the name, they're micro, so they're small. So they're actually limited to 325 watts. Well, panels have gotten all the way up to 410 watts. So when I take a 410 panel and I slap it on a microinverter, that 410 panel might as well be 310 because or 325, sorry. It doesn't matter that it's 410. The microinverter only can do that.
All right, that makes sense. Can solar panels be easily expanded or upgraded? So, for example, you know, you get 10 and you find out that you need more. Is that's not too challenging? No?
Not at all. This is actually something very different about the way I sell. I can't unsell people panels. I can add panels on relatively easily. So when I get these customers that we start talking about their electric bill and they go, well, I plan to buy an electric vehicle. Okay, well, when? You have one ordered this year, or you're saying one day you plan on buying one? If the answer is one day, well, then let's wait for that one day, because if you wait 5 years, then there's a good chance that EVs get more efficient and I didn't need to sell you as many panels to offset the bill. Additionally, you may never buy one. So depending on how set they are on that, I just go, let's just wait till that happens because they're very expandable. Same thing with batteries. If I get a person where we're one battery makes sense, maybe you need a second one, but it is a giant maybe. Are you going to be able to switch your washer and dryer to the morning time and these things? Yeah, I think I'll be able to do that. Okay, well, then let's start with one battery because the second battery stacks right on top and is very easy. It's more costly to put a second battery on. Like the second battery doesn't cost as much as the first battery. So let's just wait because I can't unsell you the battery. If you call me in 2 years and go, hey, Chris, I'm looking at it, and I noticed I've never touched my second battery. Can you come pick it up and give me my 10 grand back? The answer is no. So in the basis of I can always add, I can't subtract, there's no need if we have so much unknown to just kind of dive in and get the world's largest system.
Yeah, that makes sense. So is there a typical payback period for the investment in solar panels?
Yeah, so when I'm looking at a cash payback period, how we're estimating it out is we take your utility bill. If you pay $200 a month, that means you pay $2,400 a year. We're adding 5%. Reason we add 5% is the CPUC, California Consumer. It's basically the federation that regulates the law in California and what we're allowed to do. The utility companies did something very slick, which was in their negotiations made it where that's the max we're allowed to quote people. If you actually went and looked at utility companies, they raise their rates anywhere from 12 to 15%, like clockwork, never less. So when I'm quoting someone a 5% raise, that is as conservative as you can possibly be. When we're looking at that, if you get a really, really good south-faced roof and someone's bill is bigger, so the bigger the bill is typically the cheaper the sooner the payback period. And the reason for that is the battery. If I'm selling you a 13.5 battery, 13.5 kilowatt battery on a 4 kilowatt system, you actually probably don't need that big of a battery, but that's the only battery Tesla makes. So there becomes a point where like the smaller systems are actually paying, their ROI is a little longer. That being said, we're typically looking somewhere in 5 to 7 years is the calculation that calculates out. I believe it will be faster than that.
Because again, of the increase.
The increase is significantly more than that. But even if for some reason we ever got to a point where the utility was only going up 5%, your ROI would still be somewhere in the 5 to 7 year neighborhood.
I'm guessing there's some special requirements and permits that one needs to get from the city or the local municipality. Is that fair to say? To get solar, you have to get permits.
Yeah, so we do permit this whole thing. That's kind of part of our job. Okay. It's actually funny. So we have an office in Irvine. It's why we are who we are. The owner of our company does not sub any of our work out. So my industry is actually really unique in the sense of most of my industry is multiple companies functioning as one. You have a sales organization, a management team, and then subcontractors. These people typically sell the job. Once they get paid, they're done with it. These people manage the job. They're looking at what the spread is and who they can find in the area to install it for the cheapest. And these people are getting subcontracted in to install it. At Orange County Solar, we do the whole entire process inside, which makes it where it's a lot easier to regulate for my owner, for me. As a salesperson, I get to go stand in your project manager's office. Something goes wrong and go, I'm not leaving until something happens.
Yeah, one and done. One call.
Exactly. Yeah. So it makes it way easier. Additionally, with three different organizations that are typically not all in California, communication's harder. Again, I'm in the same building as every single person that's going to be on your property. But yes, this is a white glove service. We do the whole thing. We have to permit it. We have to do, you know, engineers and calculations to make sure that it fits all the city codes. At the end of the whole thing, we have to submit all these permits and get it approved by the city and then take that approval and go get you turned on from the utility company, because that is part of the utility company's requirements. They're not going to let you get turned on with them unless you've gotten it permitted. So you can't actually go the non-permitted route unless you're going to go 100% off grid.
Well, that leads to my actual final question, which was, I thought, for me, my most relevant question, can someone get off the grid?
Theoretically, 100%. Is it cost effective? No. Because essentially, during the winter times, you need enough solar that you're going to actually be able to produce. So you have to way oversize your system, because in the winter, the systems don't produce as much. Additionally, you need enough battery storage that you can last multiple days, because in the winter time, you'll have days where unless you way oversized your system, your system didn't produce what you actually used.
So it can be kind of dangerous unless you oversize your system.
It could be dangerous again. So it just becomes not cost effective, because you basically have to build a solar farm for your home.
Right.
And so that's why staying connected to the grid it's basically your backup. You're off grid in the sense of these newer systems with the Powerwall Plus and how it works. Your whole home is backed up. You're off the grid. You're not using the utility company. Tesla actually has a setting where you can go off grid, and now you cannot pull from the grid.
Oh, interesting.
So in theory, the goal is to be as off grid as possible, but you always want to be connected to the grid just in case.
Just in case.
Because if not, again, it just becomes your $50,000 system now needs to be a $150,000 system to guarantee you that you're always going to have electricity.
And what happens if you're, speaking of being on grid, if let's say you produce enough electricity to cover everything, can your electric bills from Edison be zero?
In theory, yes. Again, it's not cost effective now. There's always going to be a $10 to $12 connection fee. You're using our grid, you have to pay $10 to $12 bucks.
A month.
Other than that, it can be zero, but again, your usage has to be, you have to be very use conscious. So how much is my system producing? When is it producing it, and am I using it during that time? Is my battery big enough to pull from on the times that my system is not producing?
Now, what about, it just occurred to me, do you have a lot of customers? Of course, if you're focused in, well, you do San Diego County, Orange County, what areas do you service?
So we're stationed in Irvine. We basically go 75 to 100 miles up, 75 to 100 miles down. So we go all the way down to San Diego. We go into L.A., we go inland. Yeah, I would say an hour and a half from Irvine.
So do you have any homes, let's say in the mountains or the desert, where they really don't have a choice but to go with solar, or at least they're off grid, or am I making sense at all?
Yeah. So we have had customers reach out to us, and they've bought land out in the desert, and there's no utility line out there. So they have to install enough solar batteries, Transformers to basically run their whole entire everything. So, I mean, I recently had a customer that they had a well on a piece of property out in the desert, and they wanted enough solar that they could run a electric pump so that they could run their well, so that their well could run other things. So it's definitely a thing. It's definitely growing, the off-gridders, the doomsday preppers.
Right.
So COVID has brought in a lot of people into our industry, which is the idea of, like, do you want one single person to have the ability to just shut your electricity off? And so that's brought in a whole nother people where they're not even looking at it from an ROI standpoint. They strictly like the idea of no one can shut me down. I have enough I have one or two batteries. I have a 10 to 15 kilowatt system. Could I run everything all day, every day? No, but if the grid really decided to shut down, could I run my basic essentials throughout most of the day? Absolutely. And so
does a generator factor in any way, shape, or form too? Those same people have generators, I'm guessing.
Most of those people do. So most of those people have gas generators, and same idea where you just plug a gas generator into your home.
But you got to have a battery.
So, I mean, gas generators are basically what batteries are. And then instead of electricity, it's gas. So you really just need enough gas. So gas generators are probably a more cost effective way to do it. Obviously, the Californian people don't like them because they're not green.
Plus gas. I mean, you have to have gas.
Correct.
Sun's pretty much always there.
Exactly.
Somewhat.
So, I mean, we actually have a lot of people, not a lot, but a lot of people that are off-gridders. What they do is they install a solar system with battery, they install a transfer switch, and then they plug into that switch a gas generator. So basically it's, we're going to run my solar system as often as it can run. And then if it ever ran down and we were in the middle of the winter and we went 4 days without enough sun, I could just flip this on. And then I keep 10 gallons of gas at my house and I could run this thing for a couple days.
And that becomes your...
And that becomes your power source.
Safety. All right. Well, you've been so incredibly resourceful and answered a lot of great questions. I think people are wanting to know, is there anything that I should have asked that you get asked a lot, you can think of?
No, not really. I think we covered, most of everything that we talked a lot about products and stuff. We didn't talk a lot about specifically Orange County Solar, like the installer. Again, we're all in-house. That's why I believe where I work. I've been in this industry 6-7 years. I've worked for, I would say, anywhere from 7 to 10 different installers. I purposely ended up here when I did enough research. I love Vincent. I love his brother, Ashton, who's our ops manager. I believe in the way that they run their business. They're very customer-friendly. It's the only installer I've ever worked for where this is construction. Like, people want to try to pretend that it's not. Things go wrong. It's impossible to never have a mistake. I've worked for companies where they go, well, legally in our contract, we don't have to take care of that, so we're not. That's not them. If we mess up, they feel it's their problem, and we got to go upside down in a project. It is what it is. It's our fault.
Yeah.
And so I like that they're there. I like that they're very quality control. I've definitely gone in their offices and gone, I told our customer we were going to do XYZ. You told me I could tell my customer we were going to do XYZ. Why are your guys in the crew not knowing how to do XYZ? Okay, we'll take care of that. We'll handle that. So I believe in them. I think the fact that they're Panasonic Elite and Tesla certified and Tesla premium kind of speaks volumes to the employees that they hire and the way that they run their ship. So I think we are the safest bet when it comes to, it's a 25-year investment. More than likely, they're going to be here.
Makes sense. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming here. And let our listeners know how to get a hold of you if anybody has any further questions that we didn't cover today. What's the best way to reach you?
You can call me at my cell, 714-788-3587. You can email me at chris@ocsolar.com.
All right. Or contact me, everybody, and we'll have it in the show notes, this connection. And please, I hope you found this helpful. If you can, subscribe to our YouTube channel and or to our podcast on Apple and Spotify. And again, thanks for coming, and thank you everybody for watching, and stay tuned for our next show. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, Be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.